of this session, which is approved for continuing education, contact hours by the National Commission for Health Education Credentialing. The purpose of overall goal we had in putting this together was to enable you to better articulate the unique competencies that you have as health education specialists to the employment market. And then more specifically, to talk about the changing events in the marketplace that are influencing the dynamics of the employment of health educators, the ability for you to be able to communicate with employers in using specific language that they understand, not necessarily our language, about your unique knowledge and skills, and then to be able to advocate to human resource directors and others that are in employment hiring positions about hiring professionally trained health educators, including certified health education specialists. The way we'd like to work this afternoon was we'll have three brief presentations about the employment market, what employers are saying about health educators, and sharing with you the results of a study that several organizations worked together to commission, and then recognition of CHESS certification by employers. After that, we are going to invite three distinguished panel respondents that we've asked to join us this afternoon to give us their reactions to these presentations and to tell us what it's like to be on the front lines hiring health educators or marketing themselves to employers. Okay, so the employment outlook for health educators. What's going on today? Well, I thought it would be helpful just to start off with a grasp of, you know, what is the characteristics of a profession, and especially in the sociologic literature, what defines, what are the kinds of characteristics we're looking for that would make us unique, just as many other professions are considered unique? Well, first of all, health education has a distinct body of knowledge and theory that we draw on for effective research and practice. We have quality assurance of professional preparation programs. We have some more than 250 professional preparation programs around the country, that many of which are subscribed to being accredited to the Council on by the Council on Education for Public Health, or the SOFIAHI Baccalaureate Approval Committee. We have a code of ethics for our profession. We have verified competencies and subcompetencies, and I would say that being interacting with many other public health professions, this makes us unique and way out front, and Linda's going to talk more about that a little bit later. We have a certification system. The CHESS specialist has been around since 1988. And last but not least, which why we wouldn't put it in the sociologic literature of defining a profession, we are also valued in the sense by the Department of Labor in as a unique occupational classification. So what does the Department of Labor say about this standard occupational classification known as 21-1091? First of all, this unique occupational classification was not created until 1998. Now, we all know that health education and health promotion has been around a lot longer than that, and BLS has been, that is the Bureau of Labor Statistics, has been gathering data about our occupation. However, we were grouped with many, many other similar classifications. So when I may, you know, go to search the BLS system and say, well, where do health educators work? How much money are they making? How many of them are there? I would never know truly the answer to that question, because our occupation was grouped with many others. So in 1998, we advocated, and that is many of the health education organizations, including APHA, advocated for the Department of Labor to have a unique occupational classification for health educators. We were successful. If you want to go in there after today and be able to track what they're saying and look at the data, you can go into the bls.gov, search health educator, and you'll find the statistics there. In 2006, they enumerated their, which is the latest data available, they said that there were 62,000 jobs in health education. Where are health educators working? Well, according to this data, the largest proportion of us are working in the healthcare and social service sectors, about 53%. About 20% are working in state and local government, and about 28% in a broader category known as other, and grant-making service organizations, social advocacy organizations. Earnings, The median earning level was $41,330. Middle 50% was looking at somewhere from the range of $31,000 to $56,000. The lowest 10%, $24,750. And the highest 10% were earning $72,500 and over. And my guess is a lot of those in the category would be academics included. What is the Bureau of Labor Statistics saying about health educators? Well, I was very excited to see the publication of the latest Occupational Outlook handbook for the Department of Labor. Health educators were only one of two professions that they added to their 07-08 handbook. So we really got a lot of visibility out of this latest publication by the Department of Labor. And they have a very nice article explaining in very layman's terms about what is a health educator, where do they work, what kinds of skills and competencies do they have. And I would suggest to you that for those who are trying to educate employers, this is a really good authoritarian source to share with other stakeholders, employers, about what is a health educator. In this document that I'm referring to, this in the occupational handbook, they said that the expected growth of our profession will be somewhere around the neighborhood of 26% over the next decade, that they believe that there's going to be a lot more demand for health educators over this next decade, primarily due to the increased health care costs, people understanding that they have to put more into prevention, and that there's the general population interest in health. They estimate that by the year 2016, there'll be 78,000 at least health educators, and that there'll be a high demand for those with graduate degrees, that is beyond the entry level. Okay, well, how does this compare? This is pretty good, you know, bright statistics. How does this compare with the overall workforce trends and where what we might be fitting into that context? Okay, well, can anybody guess what these famous persons might have in common? I'm gonna take a guess. Pardon me? Overachievers, you said? They're rich, okay. Anybody else? Well, believe it or not, they're all over the age of 60, some in the 65 plus category. So what we are seeing is, you know, the aging population, certainly the aging population, and what the Census Bureau was telling us is that, you know, less than 20% of males 65 and older are actually in the workforce versus 50% in 1950. So you see obviously a greater trend toward retirement. That females are working in much larger numbers earlier in life, but after 65, there's only about 10% that remain in the workforce. In 2003, there were 35 million Americans aged 65 and over, but by the year 2030, that number will double. So basically what this is saying, the Census Bureau is saying, we're going to have a lot, much more increased segment of the population that is not going to be in the workforce. Higher numbers aging, and yet we won't be considered necessarily, according to these predictions, as part of the workforce. How does that relate to public health? Well, the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials did a survey in 2007 just to say, well, what's going to happen to us, especially those of us in public health, with this graying of America. And they found that the average age of the public health worker is 47 years, that the new hires coming on board that they're recruiting are at least 40 years and older, that 20% of the state health agency workforce is eligible for retirement in 3 years. And by 2012, which is really, to think about it, less than 4 years away, more than 50% of some states' workforces will be eligible to retire. So we are going to be facing a major public health workforce shortage in the next couple years. What are some of the issues impacting the workforce crisis? Well, there's budget constraints. We all know are feeling that painfully in the last several months especially, and the budget constraints as they affect state budgets, lack of competitive wages for many state health departments. Many times they encounter hiring practices or policies that are especially restrictive on who they can hire and how and what candidates we might consider qualified. They have to have a much larger description of that, much broader description, in order to bring in qualified or to bring in candidates according to their state rules. There's a general lack of interest by new graduates in working for government, lack of visibility of public health careers in general, and then there's generational differences that were noted, and I'll talk about that in a second. In this ASTO report, they said that there's especially workforce shortages in the following categories. And you can see, runs, nurses are no surprise, but epidemiologists, laboratorians, environmental health workers, nutritionists, dietitians, public health physicians, social workers. What I found especially curious was that health educators was not on that list. And I have to think, you know, this may be a suggestion or point to the need that the attitude toward employers that, well, we can get other people to do that job of health educator. That's just my hypothesis, and then Stephen will be sharing with you the results of a survey. Just getting back to this whole generational differences and who is available for the workforce now and how that compared to the baby boomers, the context that I fit in there. I mean, I think today employers are grappling with a number of issues about what the Gen X and Gen Ys want from their job. They want jobs that are fun, challenging, interesting. Maybe money may not be the primary motivator. They're certainly not looking at pensions, and they certainly don't have the longevity with employers that they did at one point. One individual may be staying with a company for 20 or 30 years, much more common for a young professional today to change employers in 18 months, 2 years, or whatever. They certainly don't want to, as one article I read pointed out, is more of the context of coming to work with an attitude. They have a lot higher expectations. I want the office with the window. I want to have these days off to go on vacation. I'm coming in with a lot more demands than those of us in the might be in that baby boomer generation, happy to have a job, giving me opportunity. I'll work my hardest and go from the bottom to the top. So that just gives you a little bit of context for where health educators are in this whole public health workforce crisis. But what are some of the initiatives that may impact this? Well, what are we trying to do to turn the situation around? First of all, in the broad field of public health, there's a lot more emphasis in the last couple of years on developing undergraduate public health curricula. We didn't used to see a student being able to go to a professional preparation program and getting an undergraduate degree in public health. I mean, that just didn't exist. And there's a lot more emphasis on developing that line of study at colleges and universities. Even the Council on Education for Public Health, the accrediting body, is now beginning to say to those MPH programs and schools of public health, they will accredit the undergrad public health curriculum when those institutions go through their graduate accreditation study. We now have on the horizon, just introduced this year, the new certification exam for public health professionals or public health students of public health. You must be enrolled in a school, accredited school or program of public health to sit for the exam. So that's a new dimension on the horizon that we're going to be bumping up against. And then there's a lot of efforts that are going on right now I just want to share with you in terms of public health branding. You know, how can we get more people interested in careers in public health? How can we educate the public about public health and their contributions? And certainly health educators are part of that. I'm participating in the Public Health Collaborative, or Public Health Branding Collaborative, which is a group of about 12 different organizations that are actually working with marketing and branding consultants to help us identify directions for educating the public about the value of public health practitioners. And there's actually the ASTO, as a result of their activity in this area, has produced produced some focus groups that are available on YouTube that you can actually view and see what consumers are saying about public health when they're educated. Most of them are unaware of what it is, even today with post-Katrina and post-9/11. But when they're educated about the different aspects, whether it be health education or health behavior, environmental health, they're very supportive. Another initiative that's going on right now is the National Association of City and County Health Officials have invested in identifying a brand for local public health agencies. And the intent there was to try to come up with something that was easily recognizable, like you would see fire departments or EMS squads or police departments. And that one on the lower right is being adopted now. And I don't know if any of you are from a public health department that's using that. Anybody here? I have seen that. I've started recognizing it on a variety of different websites that I've been to, and there are specific guidelines for public health departments that want to adopt that logo. Association of Schools of Public Health have been branding, and they may even have it at their booth downstairs. I haven't been by yet, but they have been encouraging through campaigns and through competitions among schools of public health, et cetera, to use this kind of a sticker approach that when you see public health in action, you know, you put up this sticker that says this is public health, and trying to do a broader educational campaign of what's been, you know, to the public about recognizing, associated many of the things they take for granted with public health. How do these relate to the health education, health promotion profession? That's what's going on in our broader context. Specifically, what are we doing to try to improve the public's knowledge of health education, health promotion? I mentioned about the collaboration, and that's going to be continuing to spill out, I would guess, for the next year or so. But we, as in SOFI, have taken the lead on sponsoring National Health Education Week, which is the third week in October. And anybody's welcome to join us in that effort. But it's really an initiative that we adopt a theme every year around which we do some promotional materials, and working with our chapters are encouraged to do it at the local level to raise the visibility on a specific issue, whether it be injury, poison control, whatever, and then use that opportunity in reaching the media and reaching the public to educate them about these are functions that are done by health educators. Stephen will share with you the market research on employers that many of our organizations have been supporting. Linda and I are involved in an effort that is now crosswalking the new public health competencies with our health education or CUP competencies to see where there are similarities and differences, and we hope to be releasing the results of that soon so that you can better articulate to employers how your specialties in health education can bring value to the employment market. Advocacy, we certainly have been involved in Capitol Hill in trying to advocate for more support of especially in the area of diversity, to improve the diversity of our public health education workforce. And this past June, SOFI was involved with an activity in the over in Northern Ireland at Galway University to establish international competencies or global competencies in health education. And you can see lovely Galway University. We came up as a consensus of an invitation. It was an invitational meeting of about 35 people from around the world that we're really looking at. If one wanted to practice globally in public health promotion, what kind of competencies would you need to have? And recognize many of our young professionals do expect to want to work internationally. We feel this is a really important and groundbreaking foundation for our field. We now have these competencies, these 8 domains of practice, available on the SOFI website until January, and we invite your comment. We're going around different segments of around the world to invite their response to see if we got it right. So in summary, I think that there is an optimistic prospect for the future employment of health educators. We know that there's going to be a workforce crisis anticipated. What kind of opportunities that might present for us to work with not only state and local health departments, but many other employment sectors that are going to be anticipating a graying of America. We need to engage into some broad efforts to inform and educate the public about public health. And there are broad efforts to attract new professionals to the public health education careers and better educate employers about the value added of our field.